Retire your overplayed playlist. You'll never hear the same mix twice on AMP. AMP is a free live radio app where anyone can hop on the mic and play the music they love, so you can discover new to you playlists as they're made. Download AMP, that's A-M-P, in the App Store.
Enjoy quality homemade meals without the hassle. With Chef, you can choose from thousands of authentic dishes prepared with care by the best local cooks in your community, all made with fresh ingredients and delivered right to your door. It's like your own personal chef with an unbeatable variety. Explore cuisines from over 90 different countries, from Mexico to Thailand and more, at chef.com. That's chef with an S.com.
Hi everyone, you are listening to Hot Off the Mess. I am your host, Samantha Bush, and welcome to another Bravo Friday podcast. I am ready to get into all of it because I feel like there's a lot to talk about this week. So first, congrats are in order for Sheena Shea and Brooke Davies on their engagement. The two got engaged earlier this week. She was spotted with a gigantic rock on her finger. And I'm curious because I know Vanderpump Rules just like wrapped filming. So I'm wondering if he did it on camera. I hope he didn't. And I know that that might be controversial, but I already have like this feeling this man, this Australian like rugby player, is a little bit of a thirst monster. So I hope he did it off camera just to kind of show everyone, like, listen, I'm really in love with Sheena. Like, I do, you know, it's not just about the fame and the Instagram ads. Because one of the things I really, listen, I don't love Randall and Lala. Like, I'm not their biggest fan, but I don't hate them. But I did really like that he did their proposal off camera. Like, he waited. And I thought that that was actually, like, really nice. Because I do think that they have, like, a real relationship despite, like, how it may look to people. Because due to the age difference or the money or whatever. So while we're on the topic of Randall and Lala and Vanderpump Rules, let's talk about Midnight in the Switchgrass. If you are not familiar, which I'm sure you're not, let me tell you all about it. It's a movie that Randall Emmett, so Lala Kent's fiance, produced and directed. It stars Machine Gun Kelly, MGK, and Megan Fox, and Bruce Willis. Feels random. Feels like a very chaotic group of people. It currently has 11% on Rotten Tomatoes, which his films usually don't. They don't do that well, I gotta say. So this was the movie that MGK and Megan Fox actually met on. So this is what started it all. And if you know me, you know that I'm like obsessed with these two. I just think that they are like one of those couples that are just like made for each other. I don't know them, obviously. I don't really know their personalities all that well, because she was kind of shunned by Hollywood actually for a while, because she came out and spoke out against whatever his face is from the Transformers movies. Not Shia LaBeouf, but the director. I cannot think of his name right now, but it really doesn't matter. He sounds like a piece of shit. She kind of came out and spoke out against him, that he was like really like sexualizing her, and you know, because she's always been kind of this like sex symbol, and even like from a very young age, she was very sexualized. So, and like, she's literally one of the most beautiful women on the planet. But anyways, so that's how they met on the set of this movie. And so I saw this on Twitter because the premiere just happened. And I saw this on Twitter and on at Not Skinny But Not Fat's Instagram. She's hilarious. Go follow her if you don't. I'm sure you already do. But if you don't, go follow her, Not Skinny But Not Fat. That Lala was standing in front of the movie poster for Midnight in the Switchgrass, and strategically was standing right in front of Megan Fox's photo. So it was like this movie poster, and it has Bruce Willis. I don't know why that's so funny to me. It just feels so random. But Bruce Willis and Megan Fox are on the cover of this, you know, poster. And Lala's standing like directly in front of her. Like, you cannot tell that Megan would even be on the poster. And then also, like, up at the very top where it says, you know, like, who's starring in the movie, it will say, like, Megan Fox, Bruce Willis, and another actor. They didn't put Machine Gun Kelly on the poster, but because I don't know. I mean, I don't know like what type of role he was playing. But anyways, so over the credit of Megan Fox, she wrote, "So excited for this." So you would have literally no idea that Megan Fox was even in this movie. And I just have to know why. Like, I need to know the tea. So I did a shallow dive, light investigating into this, because if you really think about it, if you follow these two people, Megan Fox or Machine Gun Kelly, they have done zero promotion for this movie. Zero. Nothing on their Instagram. Like, nothing. They weren't at the premiere of the movie, which is, like, very strange because, I mean, like, you'd think that they would be there just based off of, like, sentimental value. Like, they're so in love. They're soulmates. And this is how they met. Like, this was, like, the movie that brought them together. So, like, you'd think that that would, like, be a huge selling point for them to go and also for the movie to do well. So it's very, very weird that they didn't go to the premiere. But, like, of course, the entire cast of Vanderpump Rules went to the fucking premiere. Kristen Doughty went to the premiere with her strange boyfriend. Stassi even went. Sheena, like, everybody was there. You get the point. Everybody was there. So Megan's rep told Variety, quote, "Due to the recent California mask mandate and rise of COVID cases, Megan Fox will no longer be attending the premiere tonight." And I'm just not buying that, because her and MGK have kind of been doing, they've been doing other press. They've been seen out and about a lot together. Like, they've been at concerts with Travis Barker and Kourtney Kardashian. Like, they've been places. So I'm just kind of not really buying it, because she's also done like a lot of recent interviews, and she mentions like the other projects that she is going on and has, again, never once brought up this movie. So I just think it's important to take a look back on Randall Emmett and his quote unquote filmmaking that has grossed him over $1.2 billion apparently, which is like a fuckload of money. Like, I feel like he's about to be the next one going to space. And I also hope you guys don't mind, but my throat's feeling a little itchy, so I'm gonna got some ASMR going. I'm taking a little sip of my coffee. Okay. Anyways, in a Vulture article from March of 2021, this year, they kind of put it very plainly. It's called, you guys have to read this. It's called The King of Geezer Teaser. So Vulture did an article. This is so funny to me. I don't know why. Called The King of the Geezer Teasers. Let me catch you up here. Randall has done a lot of films recently, specifically with like Al Pacino or Robert De Niro or Bruce Willis. Like, so they're the geezers, clearly. No offense, but they are. So that's why it's called that. And like, it's got this like really funny, like kind of caricature of like Randall in the middle, like surrounded by all these like quote unquote geezers. It's just kind of, it's funny artwork. Please go check it out. It's on Vulture. But so anyways, so Vulture put out this article, and in it they said, quote, "There's a crude, blunt brilliance to Emmett's filmmaking formula. Accept money from just about anyone willing to hand it over, offer vast sums of it to an aging star, the geezers, for a day or two of work, and then leverage that actor's name to pre-sell the movie in foreign markets." And that just makes a lot of sense if you think about it. Like, that is literally, if you look back at all of his movies, like, that he's quote-unquote produced, like, that's what he has done. Like, Robert De Niro was in movies of his, Al Pacino, like I said. God, remember that one movie, I think it's called Gotti, he did. Oh, God. And it was like, it has 0% on Rotten Tomatoes.
It's a very exclusive list, the movies that have gotten a 0% on Rotten Tomato. Dark Tide, Max Steel. Do you remember how Max Steel was? Because I do. Police Academy 4, Cabin Fever, The Nutcracker in 3D. And there's Gotti right on the bottom, 2018, at the bottom of the list. You know, I mean, it's really harder to get a 0%, I think, than 100%.
And I remember on Vanderpump Rules, they talked about this, and it was kind of like a joke because it Lala blamed Hollywood for not being interested or supporting movies in quote unquote that genre being the mafia, which is absolutely ridiculous because that is one of like the most lucrative, I feel like, Hollywood genres you could get into. Like, people fucking love that shit. You guys know, hopefully you've listened to the episode. It was like my friend Paige was on. She is like deeply, deeply invested in the mob and like their life. Oh my God. I have my sweater on backwards. I just like went and touched my neck. Oh my God. I feel the tag. Anyways, so embarrassing. Sorry. Anyways, so she said that the mafia was like, it is just a genre that doesn't do well. And of course, James Kennedy like had to laugh about it. Like, he does a really, really funny confessional. But just because he's like this producer and director who's made apparently $1 billion, it doesn't mean he's like successful. I mean, I guess it just depends how you measure success. Like, if you measure it by like how much money you're making, like, fuck yeah. Like, clearly he is. But in the same article, they state that he, quote, begged Marty, so Martin Scorsese, Marty, for a script that he couldn't get financed so that he could finance it for him. A producer who has worked with Emmett told the author of this article this, that the film turned out to be Silence, which had languished in development for decades before Emmett helped Scorsese find some of the money that finally got made. And then they went on to say that Emmett leveraged this deal with Scorsese to earn a non-PGA producer credit for The Irishman, but it did not earn him the respect of his peers. So The Irishman was the movie that, like, everyone's basically shitting themselves over. Like, every man in the world was, like, jerking off to the fucking Irishman. It is, I think it's, like, 4 hours long. I refuse to watch it because I can't sit somewhere for that long unless I'm watching like old Real Houses of New York episodes. Like, I can't. It just feels like it even sounds like it moves slow, like The Irishman. But it got nominated for Golden Globes and Oscars. And just like, I remember imagining Lala sitting in the same room as Meryl Streep. And I just can't. So he also has like a really bad reputation in the industry. Vulture said broad expanses of his own industry now view him with suspicion, including unions like the Writers Guild of America West, which has placed his production company Emmett Furla / Oasis or EFO Films on its strike list, citing its failure to comply with an arbitration award amounting to $524,367 after interest. So there's that. So I just don't think he has a lot of respect in the industry. Is the vibe that I'm getting? Like, I mean, I don't know much about all of that, but, like, just the tone of this article specifically, like, it doesn't paint him in, like, a great light. Because they also mention that he's still viewed as Mark Wahlberg's personal assistant, which he was for many years. I believe that they grew up together, if I'm recalling this correctly. He was, you know, also the inspiration behind Turtle of Entourage. That's the rumor. And I think he's never corrected that record because I think he thinks it like makes him sound like so fucking cool. But, and then we also all remember the Fofty drama, which was one of the highlights of my entire life when him and 50 Cent were feuding on Instagram and Twitter. Like, and he was like begging Fofty is what his autocorrect kept changing it to like stop. And then he would post like pictures of him and like an EKG machine hooked up because Fofty was like just asking him for his money back. So all of this is to say, what I'm trying to get at here is maybe Megan and MGK have like some bad blood with Randall. Like, he does seem to have some issues with a lot of people in the industry. And I feel like he's kind of like a hangers-on. You also have to remember this too, that Jax Taylor is supposedly like working with him now. Like, apparently Randall got him a job. Like, it's so fucking weird. It's just like, I don't know. I can't imagine. Can you imagine Jax Taylor being on set with Robert De Niro? That fucking clown on set with Robert De Niro. Like, I just, my brain can't even compute what that would even look like. But as Justin Bobby says, truth in time tells all. So enough of the VPR nonsense. let's talk Real Housewives of Potomac. So last week we left off at Wendy's like new titty party, like the nude interlude party. And you can definitely tell that there's tension between a lot of the ladies. Like, what I love about Housewives is when there's a lot of different layers, like when it's not just two people always going at each other. I mean, Karen and Giselle will always and forever feud, but there's also other things going on. Like, I think Robin and Karen kind of don't really fuck with each other. There's also the Wendy and Mia issue, who's the new housewife, who I'm very intrigued by. I am curious to see what happens with her. But I trust Wendy's judgment. Like, I trust her intuition when it comes to relationships. And, like, I just think she's a really smart woman. And I think her looking at Wendy sideways is, like, very warranted. Because I would struggle with, if I met someone who came into my home, I didn't know them, and I just asked them like simple questions like, how old are you? And she couldn't answer. I would be like, you're a fucking idiot. Like, what do you mean you don't know how old you are? It was just like, that to me like set a tone. And I think it did with Wendy too, where she was like, how can we trust you if we don't even know, like, if you don't even know how old you are and you keep doing this like back and forth and then like the math problems go up on the screen, if you remember from last week. Like, it was fucking weird. And then at the party, like when they were actually sitting down at the table, Wendy was like, let's talk about the work you've had done. And of course, like, Mia named it all, and I respect that. But also, like, just because you can name all the plastic surgery you've had doesn't mean that you won't lie about other things. And she immediately Mia like latches onto Giselle, thinks Giselle is a great woman. She says that she is a good judge of character, whatever. It just felt strange because, and Wendy even said it, and I don't even think Wendy and Karen vibe like that, but for Wendy to even say about Mia to Karen, like, why would you take up for Giselle or say Giselle is a good person or whatever if you were that close with Karen, who literally her and Giselle hate each other right now? It just feels weird. Like, this woman brought you into the group and you're basically like aligning yourself with like her enemy. Like, it just doesn't seem like something a good friend would do. But again, we're not living in like a real universe. We're living in Housewives. So I get it. We see a little bit of Mia in her penthouse, which she is not in Potomac. She is in Baltimore. So she's at the Baltimore Harbor. I've been told that there's a very big difference between the Baltimore Harbor and the Potomac Harbor. Is it the Potomac Harbor or the DC Harbor? Listen, I'm not good at geography. I don't really give a shit. But so I've been told that her husband is a lot older than her, and I'm not going to age shame because that's ridiculous. Because, you know, who doesn't love an older man? But they seem to have like a fine dynamic. Like, you know, she's taking over the businesses. He's, you know, built quote unquote an empire, you know, whatever. I kind of thought that scene was like kind of boring. Like, I don't know. I don't need to like see you like make eggs with your kids. It's not something I'm necessarily into. And I also, seeing these children in these penthouses, like, hers seemed a little bit more child friendly than Ashley's. Like, I need Ashley to get the fuck out of there. It is like tons of sharp corners, like mirrored tables. Like, it just gives me so much anxiety to watch Baby Dean like run into walls with his little toy car. Like, it just stresses me out. You know, we see Ashley's mom Sheila come over, who I think she just fucking hates Michael, and she just tolerates the fact that he pays her bills. Like, she hates him. Even Ashley in the confessionals is like, they hugged. It's like, well, I would hope so. You've been married for 8 years. And this is your mother. So I would hope that your husband and your mother hug. But we're scraping the bottom of the barrel. Scraping the bottom of the barrel. Candace is a busy little worker bee. She is getting her master's at Howard. She's a singer, an actress. I'm really enjoying seeing her and Chris together in confessionals. I think that they actually have like a really good rapport with each other. And they seem to have like a lot of fun. Then Karen throws her love lunch. So obviously, Robin's not coming with Juan because Karen always has a lot to say about Robin and Juan, and Robin's like, go fuck yourself. Giselle. Giselle's obviously not coming because she even admitted this episode that, what's his face? See, I'm not good at this. I don't know why I do this. Oh my God, Jamal. Okay. Lives in the phone, which was interesting. And people are trying to like make this, I think, a bigger deal than it really is. I don't think Giselle ever for 1 second didn't know that Jamal was the way that he was. I think she was just hurt that the women that are supposedly her friends are bringing this shit up and throwing it in her face. And I also personally struggle with, on a lot of these shows, your worth is measured by if you can keep, quote unquote, keep a man or not. Like, that's fucked up. And that's some like old school like nonsense that I just don't agree with. Like, Karen says it a lot. I know on Atlanta they say it to Kenya a lot. It just makes me uncomfortable because they're like, well, you can't keep a man. It's like, why would she want to? She doesn't need to. She's fine. Do I think that Giselle is a beautiful woman and smart and funny and can get any guy she wants? Yes. But at this time, I think she does really struggle with relationships. And like, I totally am empathetic and understanding of that because I myself struggle. So like, I tweeted the other day, and this was like really embarrassing. I don't know why I'm even talking about it, but that's why we're here. Is there's a part of me that when Giselle talks about herself in relationships, I relate to it a little bit. Because it's very easy for her to just be like, okay, I'm not doing this with you. Like, this is getting a little too difficult. This is getting a little too hard. I struggle with that as well. And her daughters kind of dragged her a little bit for this. They were like, Mom, just because someone's going through a hard time doesn't mean that like you leave them. Like, you need to be there for them. And that I think she gets a little resentful because maybe someone at one point in her life wasn't there for her the way she needed them to be. So she's just kind of like, fuck you, like, whatever. I mean, I totally could be reading into that. I personally don't think I am. There is a scene where she's in therapy in season 4 with Dr. Ken, and she talks about her and Sherman, which is her ex-boyfriend. And like, it's just a really vulnerable scene with Giselle, and I just highly recommend everybody go back and rewatch that. It's in season 4. You'll find it, I'm sure. But anyways, so yeah, I don't love that. And then so Karen has her love lunch. Everyone comes. Candace comes. And I was proud of Candace for coming. And I liked that her, because her and Karen really do, I think, have a very real, or they did have a very real friendship. And it was like, it felt really natural, where I think the relationship Karen had with like Monique, it felt very for the show. And I feel like Candace and Karen really talked a lot outside of the show. And Karen really took on like a motherly big sister type of role with her. And I just think Candace is like really, really hurt by that whole relationship with Karen and Monique. And I heard that they don't speak, Karen and Monique. At all. Karen is probably like, okay, you're off the show. You can't do anything for me anymore. But so everyone came over. The husbands came. Chris Bassett is always in some sort of look. He is always throwing together a turtleneck with a blazer and an ascot. And like this man, like, he takes risks and I appreciate it. But also, I wish he would like maybe rein it in, you know? Like, you know how they always say, like, put on all the jewelry you want and then like take off a couple pieces and like then it will, you'll figure it out. That's kind of what I want him to do, just like with his clothing. Like, it's just a lot. There's always a lot happening. And it always looks like I would be really claustrophobic in his clothes. Like, it's always, and I'm saying this as a woman whose shirt is inside out right now. So I don't know why the fuck I think I could talk about anything what people are wearing. It's like so embarrassing, but know thyself, you know, be self-aware. Okay. So now they're playing the newlywed game. And obviously, Wendy and Eddie win because I feel like they do have like a real nice relationship. I feel like they're very much in love and happy, and I think he's supportive and vice versa. And Mia bugs me. I'm going to say, I like her. I think I'm going to like her as a housewife. That doesn't mean she's not going to bug me. Is I also struggle with this idea that just because a woman doesn't really fuck with you or, you know, or something, she's automatically jealous. So automatically jealous of you. That's not the case. Like, I don't think Wendy is jealous of fucking Mia, okay? I think there might be some jealousy with Mia towards Wendy. I mean, it feels the way that she was reacting to how much Eddie and Wendy like got along, it felt weird. She looked kind of jealous. It was, and I don't know why, because I think Mia and her husband have a good relationship. It's obviously just different because her husband is 68, I think she said, and she's 36. Like, I get it. Like, your husband's pushing 70, babe. I'd be jealous too if, like, my friend had a husband like Eddie and my, you know, husband's like wanting to move to Florida to a retirement village. Like, I would be annoyed. But that bugs me because it's like, I just don't think Wendy really, I don't think that they vibe. I don't think that they have much in common personality wise. So we'll see. I'm excited to see where the season goes. I think it will be really, really good. I'm excited to watch Mia throw salad at Candace, and Candace, like, with her little baby kangaroo arms, like, has to, like, reach over the counter to, like, get, like, a piece of, like, baby spinach and, like, throw it at Mia. It's really funny. I can't wait for that. But so that's Potomac this week. I feel like things happened, but I feel like it's just setting the stage. And next week we get to see Juan yell at Robin for being depressed and wanting to sleep, which I can't wait to scream about that. So, this week's Roni, it felt good. I'm just going to say that. It felt really good. It felt like we were getting somewhere. It felt like there was something to hold on to. Now, I do think we are hanging on by a Giovanni thread. I think I will take any little nugget and just hold on to it and cherish it because the season's been so terrible. So, like, this is, like, the only way to go from here is up. You know what I'm saying? I don't think we can go lower than where we've been. But this episode, it felt good. I saw little glimmers of, you know, old Roni or, like, just something to sink your teeth into. Now, I'm struggling personally with this idea of this Bershawn-Sonia situation. I think that they were both out of line, but I'm so protective of Sonia. I think she's like a really, really beautiful, good person. There's a part of her that feels so, I don't want to say the word broken, but she's very, she's actually very private. I'll get into that later when I talk about the seance, but she does a lot of things to, like, protect herself, I think. Like, being the class clown or the funny girl. I know she quotes Fanny Brice all the time, which I love because I love Funny Girl, the movie with Barbara Streisand. Please go watch it. It gave Barbara her first Oscar. So anyways, and Fanny Brice's birthday is October 29th, as is mine. Anyways, so Sonia, I just don't like that Bershawn came so hard at her because it didn't feel like it was coming from anywhere real. It just felt like Bershawn was making a scene, and I enjoyed it thoroughly because I want something to fucking happen. But I just wish it was someone like Leah or something, like, who isn't Sonia, who, like, I even think the other women are very protective of her because she's so sensitive and, like, is always kind of in this space. And while I am tired of hearing about a lot of the repetitive bullshit with Sonia, I will say, I still, like, want to hug her. Like, that's really what it is. I just want to hug her, and I just felt that the whole fight was kind of uncalled for. And Sonia breaking the glass of the fire extinguisher, like, that was just fucking weird. And I'm just like, Sonia, what are you doing? Why are you doing this? I'm pissed that production, like, framed it this way where we didn't get to see really any of it. That was annoying. But in the morning, Leah FaceTimes Lou, tells Lou, like, what happened the night before because she had to break up the fight along with producers, who I love to see when production gets involved. It's truly one of my favorite things. I gotta say, Leah's skin is fucking beautiful. Like, there's something about Leah and the way that she speaks that I'm obsessed with. Like, I get very obsessed with people's, like, voices and cadence and hand gestures, like, and their fingernails. Like, I know this sounds so creepy. Like, I'm obsessed with their fingernails. But it's very much like Barbara Streisand, like, the way that she speaks with her hands. And, like, her nails are always really long. And She's got this like really interesting way of speaking, and I think Leah does too. And I just like love the way Leah speaks. I know that's weird. I know there are people out there who literally want Leah like to be found in like the Bermuda Triangle, but I don't mind her. The glam squads. I talked about this on Twitter and Instagram this week. I'm fucking sick of them. I never have been a fan of the glam squads. I get how it works on a show like Beverly Hills, maybe. To some extent, I do think people go a little fucking overboard. Obviously, Erica and Dorit. It's just like not my thing. I'd never watched Housewives to see their fucking them in a glam chair. Like, that's just not what I watch this for. I don't want to know how you get to look the way that you look. I just want you to show up on time and ready to fucking play. I don't need to see your glam squad in a hazmat suit. They looked like the fucking child protection agency creatures from Monsters, Inc. Like, that is when maybe we should take a step back and be like, I don't think this is working. Oh, we don't need glam squads in Salem, Massachusetts during a pandemic. That's just me. I don't think it is necessary. And I also think if your glam squad has to wear foot booties, PPE of all sorts of PPE, like jackets, bonnets, masks, fucking goggles and visors, like maybe we shouldn't be doing this. I don't know. I feel like you can smoke out your eye pretty good on your own. Maybe it's like throw on some fucking blush. And so I made this post about it and people were thinking that I was just talking about Ebony and Leah. No, I've had an issue with Roni having glam since Tinsley, because that it's just not Roni. Like that's not, it just isn't what it's about. It never has been. I love when these women wake up with no makeup on and they look like complete fucking shit. And I relate 100%. So that I could do without that going forward. And then the seance, the whole seance thing. I do love a seance. I love a psychic. I love a fortune teller, a voodoo doll. I love tarot cards. I love it all. And this was no exception because I really loved seeing more into Sonia's childhood because we've never talked about it. She briefly brought it up back in season 6 when they were in the Berkshires and she and Ramona had that meltdown in the woods where she was like playing with mud pies and it was very strange. And then she left on a plane and Sonia, like brings up the fact that they both had like very abusive childhoods. And that's why like she is so sympathetic towards Ramona when it comes to that stuff. So to hear that like Sonia's dad left her when she was little and was an alcoholic and her mom had 4 kids and was trying to make it work, like it really made me like love Sonia even more. And I wish that she would feel more comfortable sharing more of that with us. I think it helps people kind of like see her as like not just as a funny like clown, but as a person. And I think the other women really appreciate that as well. And then, of course, like Ramona, like hearing that her brother died 2 years ago, like that's so sad. That really broke my heart because she brought up something that I think is relatable for a lot of people is like she couldn't fix him. So she had to protect herself and push him away from her. And that's just devastating. You know, no one wants to like that to happen. And I mean, that is her brother. So I don't know. Made me feel sad. But if you guys haven't watched, it's on YouTube. Josh Flagg of Million Dollar Listing LA interviews Sonia Morgan because they've been really close friends for like such a long time. They met through the Bravo universe many, many years ago. And they just have a really, really good friendship. And he tries to get deep with her. Like he asks her about her depression, if she struggles with that. They talk about her relationship to Mr. Morgan, how they met. Like they actually knew each other. It was interesting. Her and her ex-husband knew each other for 7 years and he would like ask her out and she always said no. And then finally she went out with him one day and he literally proposed that day and picked, like she got to pick out her 4-carat canary diamond. Absolutely flawless. She said she didn't want to go any bigger because she wanted to still garden. Girl, why are you gardening in a fucking, with a canary diamond? That like gives me anxiety. I will like barely garden with like my fucking earrings that I bought off of Amazon. Like, no, just, but then again, I'm not a wasp like Sonia, who I like adore. But she also talks about her childhood, like what her family lives in Tennessee now. It's just really interesting. I won't go on and on about it. It's on YouTube. Please go check it out. It's Josh Flagg and Sonia Morgan. Really, really funny. Now, my favorite time of the week, I struggle because I really love Potomac, but Beverly Hills is just so fucking good. So this week, Beverly Hills. It opens up, and I know this is like a very little moment, but it really struck me because Lisa Rinna, I don't see her as like a dog person. And we see her dog, and he's got a got the cone of shame on, but he's got like two little bandages on his feet. And like that's never talked about. There was like no clarification on like why her dog is like wrapped in bandages. And I'm not saying I think Lisa did anything to this dog. I'm just saying it was like a very weird moment because I didn't even know Lisa had a dog. Like we always see Erica's dog. We see Kyle's dogs. We see fucking, you know, Kathy's dog Sue last week. But like Rinna has a dog and its feet are wrapped up and like there's no like little backstory. Like she's not like, oh, like no one asked her. It was just so weird. It was such a little moment that I just like couldn't not. I can't stop thinking about it, to be completely honest. And then, of course, Dorit, we see her. She lives in her closet, much like Mary from Real Houses of Salt Lake City. Like, and I love seeing Dorit with her kids. I think her kids and her have, like, a really, really beautiful, like, relationship. I love her little daughter with her little braids. I thought it was just really cute. And then the whole group is headed to Kyle's La Quinta house. And Kyle, of course, being the very nurturing, motherly gal that she is, she has, like, a ton of fucking food set up. And I got to talk about this because there are about 32 Macintosh apples on the counter. And I'm puzzled. Because if they were lemons, I'd get it. Because people fucking love that, like, feng shui lemon shit. Like, it's ridiculous. But, I mean, if it works, hey, it works. I don't think it works for Shannon Bedore because that woman's a fucking mess. But whatever. But these are apples. And also, those are the worst flavor of apple, the worst type of apple. The Macintosh ones, like those are the ones like you get your teacher in fucking first grade that who you hate. Like you save like the Fuji apple or like the like green apple for like your good teacher. This is like the shitty apple that tastes like fucking crayons. This is like, I was just very confused why there were so many apples. I don't know why. I just had to like talk about that. That and Lisa Rinna's dog, mysteries. So everyone's there. They all look like they're going to a different event. Like Kyle is in a really relaxed jean with a flannel. Dorit looks like she's in some sort of wetsuit, scuba gear. Sutton is in like a long flowy dress. Crystal's in like this beautiful, very much Heather Dubrow, like very beautiful jacket, like very structured jacket. And then of course my queen Kathy shows up in sweatpants, who I'm obsessed with. And then ask Kyle why there's not a bellman. And then Lisa Rinna's in like a Gucci sweatsuit. So it's like, I don't know where any of them are going, but they're not going to the same place. And I would be in Kathy or Rinna's outfit. I would be in fucking comfy clothes. If I just had to drive there, I would be in comfy clothes. Kathy walks in. She's distraught because her knees hurt because she's had to drive 2 hours by herself and she never drives anywhere. She has obviously been to this house for 20 plus years and has never driven there by herself. I love this woman. I love her. I can't get enough of her. And then she also just says so many things and does so many things in the background. Like she's always just kind of shuffling around in the back or like saying these really funny, like offhanded comments. And she has no idea that they're funny. But I also think it's this idea that she's this incredibly wealthy woman of mystery that like we've only ever heard about. So to see her just like randomly look at Sutton and be like, there's an eclipse tonight. It's the first time in 600 years. And then she's like, did you feel the wind?
Today is the eclipse.
Oh, it is?
And it's one that hasn't happened in 600 years.
Oh, gosh. I hate that kind of stuff.
Okay. Didn't you notice how it was very windy?
It's like, okay. And then nothing else. Nothing else about it. It's not even a big moment. It's just she's talking to Sutton about the eclipse. And seeing Kyle and Kathy together, it just makes me so incredibly happy because she brings out the side of Kyle that Kim obviously just didn't. I think with Kim, she really, really, Kyle I'm talking about, really struggled because I think Kim made her very anxious. She always felt like she had to make excuses for Kim's behavior because I think that they're such a private family. I've talked about that many times. Big Kathy, I think, really stressed that, like, you keep things within the family and you don't talk about them. So I think she struggled with that. So I like seeing her with Kathy. I'm glad that they are on better terms. I like that they can joke about when they weren't on good terms. I think that there's just a lot of fun there. And I mean, when Kathy was walking around, like, banging the baguettes together, you guys, I was just having the time of my fucking life. I was laughing. I was like, I want to be a Richard sister. Include me next time. Like, and then when she, of course, was sweeping up the fucking glass with the grill brush. I mean, this woman is just the gift that keeps on fucking giving. And Kyle, I've always been a huge fan of Kyle. I don't think it was popular at one point to be a fan of her, but I love the mother that she is. I love the wife that she is, the friend that she is. I think she's like a beautiful person. I truly think she's the heart and soul of Beverly Hills. I don't necessarily think she's like the star or like the queen of Beverly Hills, but I do think she is like the backbone of this fucking show in a way that Teresa kind of is for New Jersey. Like, I can't see it ever moving on without them. And I feel that way a little bit with Ramona, but she's part of such like a Tres Amigas type of thing with Luann and Sonia that like I wouldn't mind seeing them without Ramona. I don't know. It's just, I feel very differently about it. I just really love Kyle, and I like how she, it did stress me out though that she was starting this lasagna, which, I mean, lasagna takes a long fucking time to make. Like, when the women were, like, just arriving. It's like, they're not eating until 1 a.m. Like, we need to face that fact. But so, of course, the women are all standing around and they're mismatching outfits. And they're talking about how Erica's assets and Tom's assets were frozen. They just received the news that they were frozen. And I do appreciate that they are questioning things. Like, they're not just like, oh, that's probably not true, or oh, this is whatever. Like, they are in their confessionals being like, I don't know what's going on. Then Erica arrives, and she, of course, walks in. She's silent. She's in heels. She is received by everybody, hugging her. And she cries the hardest when she sees Kyle, because I think Kyle, again, is so motherly, that she's just one of those people that, like, when you hug her, you just start crying probably harder. But so she sits down. They're all having a drink, and starts talking about the situation. And Kathy, sweet Kathy, is like, oh, do you know Robert Shapiro, Bob Shapiro? Now, guys, O.J. Simpson in the O.J. trial is literally, like, the seventh housewife of fucking Beverly Hills. It like, haunts these hills, much like Big Kathy. Because, like, that was a murderer's lawyer. Why? What? Like, what is going on? And then, of course, Erica brings up the fact that, like, yeah, she is good friends or was good friends with Bob Shapiro. And, but he's friends of Tom's, because Tom is, like, was a really well-respected lawyer in Beverly Hills, in LA. So he has a lot of pull with these people. And I bet, you know, they're more team Tom maybe in the whole situation, but maybe not. Who knows? But I liked the side moment with Sutton and Erica. I think that they have this like Southern girl bond with each other because they're both from Georgia. Sutton opening up about her father's suicide was like really powerful. And I think it was a way to kind of disarm Erica, to let her know, like, listen, times are fucking shitty, especially around the holidays when this is all happening. Like, my father committed suicide around Christmas. It was horrible. And as someone whose grandfather committed suicide, I do appreciate the talk about how it is very complicated for families. Like, I like that she talks about her mom's relationship with her dad versus her relationship. And I think her mom brings up a good point, is like, the relationship you and dad had is not the relationship I had. I was married to this person. So he was your dad. He was your superhero. I was his wife. Who, I mean, we don't know the ins and outs of that relationship, but I do think that that was like a really interesting moment. It really showed how layered and complicated relationships can be. And I always appreciate when they talk about that stuff. And I like that Crystal talked about later on in the episode, her dad had Alzheimer's. Again, like, I relate to that immensely. It's a very hard thing to watch someone in your life go through that. it's terrible because it's also, it's really hard in the beginning. And she talked about this, like when he was hitting his head, when he would forget things, it's like, because when you have Alzheimer's, it kind of, or at least from my experience with my grandma, they kind of know what's happening to them in the beginning. So that's hard, is like, they know that they're forgetting things and they know what's coming for them, or kind of, and they might not talk about it, but it's very real. So I don't know. I just appreciate these other like layers. It wasn't, I mean, it was about Erica, but we got to see and learn more about these other women. And I enjoy that because it shows you, it allows you to learn more about them and maybe why they are the way that they are. So yeah, I don't know. I just really enjoyed that. But let's get back to Erica. I'm confused. And I'm going to quote Vicki Gunvalson. Satan loves confusion.
I know the truth. And Satan loves confusion. This is Satan's work.
Tom, okay, let me understand this. Tom was in a car accident 3 years ago. Broke his ankle. His clavicle. But she just told the women that when it happened that he was fine. And now she's saying he was not fine. He drove off a cliff, then threw himself down said cliff. And now he's a cheater. And Kyle pipes in and says, I've heard that as well. But then, of course, in her confessional, she's like, I hear everything about everybody. And I've heard this so many times on Housewives. And that, you know, to go back to Potomac, like last season, everyone hears rumors about everyone. It's just, what do you choose to bring up? And Kyle obviously had heard these rumors, but she didn't think that there was anything to that because, again, Tom is like 83 years old and like is cheating on this on his wife. And then Erica in the confessional talks about how she found pictures and texts and he was really sloppy about the whole thing. And then I'm confused and I am frustrated because Erica is getting upset, especially on social media. I can tell of how confused people are. But it's like, you did this. Like, you are the one that was always so withholding, so cold, didn't open up, didn't say anything. And now all of a sudden, these things are happening to you. And now it's like, okay, let me just tell everyone everything, what's been going on. Oh, and he might have dementia and he can't see or hear. Like, what the fuck is happening? And we do know that just recently his brother was put in charge of his whole situation legally because apparently Tom is like unfit. I don't know. I mean, I just don't know what to believe. And there's a part of me that feel a large part, very large, is that this is almost a tactic, is to create this, all of this confusion so that it almost makes people like tap out because they're like, okay, this is too much. Because I see that a lot in Housewives, like when things get a little too like jumble-wumbled, like people are like, all right, I don't give a shit anymore. Because then you have like this guy on Twitter, I think his name is Ronald Richardson. He's like bringing up Rinna in all of this, how Rinna like has a mortgage out on her house and she owes this money. And I don't know what's going on. I don't know. And I don't think anyone fucking knows. And I think that's frustrating. But guys, I needed Garcelle at that fucking table because Garcelle would have been asking the tough questions. Her Sagittarius ass would have been all over this. And she would definitely be in confessionals like with her blue little look that I love with the sequins and the blue hair. I love that look. Being like, what is going on? And you see Sutton kind of start to ponder and question what is happening. She was on Watch What Happens Live last night and, you know, got asked about the whole waterproof mascara situation from when she was crying with Kyle. And she basically tiptoed around it, but ultimately was like, yeah, isn't that interesting that you would choose not to wear, I don't know, maybe no makeup or something the day that you're filming, knowing that you're probably going to cry. Like, I mean, and then Andy was interesting on this episode with Sutton. He was like, now I'm not a woman, but do women prepare for things like that? Like, if you know you're going to cry, do you wear waterproof mascara or whatever? And it's like, kind of. Yeah. If I know, like, for a wedding, for example, like, if I know I'm going to cry, bitch, I throw on that waterproof mascara. Like, because I don't want it running down my face. I don't know. I just think everyone's really confused. And that's pretty much where we leave it. I know that the mid-season trailer came out. It looks fucking incredible because now we get Dorit versus Garcelle. And Garcelle goes in on Dorit and snaps. And you see Erica and Sutton going at it. So really, I just want to give all the praise to Garcelle and Sutton. And I would really love if Garcelle, Sutton, and Crystal kind of all got together and figure, you know, like kind of like we're a tag team. I think that would be literally iconic. But I did also really quickly before I end this Beverly Hills segment, I did find it interesting that Rinna did say in her confessional that she saw Tom at Erica's house recently within the last year, and he was very cognizant. Like, he seemed very with it. So she's confused. Again, Satan loves confusion. Vicky Gumbelson. Well, that is it for this week. I will have new episodes every Tuesday and Friday, as well as my new podcast, Shortcomings, a Sex in the City podcast that comes out every Wednesday. So make sure you go and check those out. Also, there are amazing podcasts brought to you by The Dip. There's TV Watch Repeat, Slut Pig podcast, The Daily Pop Chaser podcast, and then our good friend of the podcast, Steve at Faces by Bravo, is launching his podcast with The Dip called But Now We Said It. It goes episode by episode into Housewives. He has amazing guests. Gina Keogh's a guest, Amy Phillips. It's just incredible. You guys, it will be so amazing. That comes out in 2 weeks. August 5th, I believe. So I just hope everyone has a great weekend and enjoy what's left of summer. So bye.
You know those cigarette butts that you see every day? They're made of microplastics and they line our streets and waterways. On California beaches, they're the number one plastic you'll find. Over 35 years, cleanups have collected millions combined. But no matter where you see them, they're all getting smaller, eventually leaching into our food, our air, our water. The tobacco industry's to blame for all of the harm that they do. For the harm to the people we love, and the harm to you too. Learn more at undo.org.
Offer deadline on Oak Street, aisle 3.
Welcome to the housing market. I'm with Redfin, and I'm here to help.
I need to sell my house.
Great. Redfin charges a 1% listing fee when you buy and sell with us, which is more than half off the usual fee, and saves you an average of $8,400.
Oh, wow. Is that all?
Yep.
I'm kidding. You had me at 1%.
Want to win? Sell with Redfin. It's real estate done right.
Average savings is Redfin refund plus 1% listing fee. Subject to minimums. Not available in all areas. Learn more at redfin.com. CADRE 015-21930.